Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, 98.3 FM, and WHUT-TV. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Before we get to the top stories of the week, we want to talk about truancy and absenteeism in the D.C. public school system. We begin with our newsmaker, Ebony Rose Thompson, president of the D.C. State Board of Education. Ms. Rose Thompson, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
Sure thing. Let's first talk about the numbers from your office. Truancy at 37%, absenteeism at 43%. That's a lot. Those numbers are really, really tough to take. What do you believe are the issues behind those numbers?
Yeah, those numbers are absolutely unacceptable. On top of it, I would say that 47%, the numbers are even worse for high schools. 47% of our high schools are actually chronically truant. There's a lot of stories behind those numbers, but the things we mostly know and need to focus on is that most of the kids are kids who are economically disadvantaged. They need supports around safety. They need supports around transportation. We have to do a better job of engagement. And then just in general, schools being a social hub for young people are really the levers we have to pull to tackle this problem.
When you talk about supporting those young people as it relates to absenteeism, for example, particularly when it comes to being a safe space, do you think that the message is lost on them or even their parents that in addition to being a place for education, that school is a safe place for them?
I don't think there's one message or one story. I think what we've heard, and we actually do have a student advisory committee at the state board, which is made up of high school students from across the district. We've heard that for some students, it's the getting to school that's unsafe in Ward 7. Yeah. We have more students than anybody else who are traversing the city. They're on metro buses. They're on trains. You know, some of them are being dropped off by their parents, but they still have to walk that distance. And so it is the city being unsafe that is one part of the equation. In addition to, there are students who, you know, might be having particular safety challenges inside their schools. But overwhelmingly, what we're hearing is this the issue getting to and from school and the city being unsafe as opposed to the schools themselves not being safe places for young people.
Interesting. And to that point, certainly with some children being on the street, whether they are idle or getting into trouble, certainly that could be one of the contributing factors to the challenges that the city is facing regarding juvenile crime.
Yeah, I think I know just as a city that we're desperate for solutions to stem that alarming rise, and especially the crime we're seeing with young people who are like, should be in like middle and high school. I definitely believe that getting kids the help they need to get back to class is a great start. But I also really do caution us that we not like abandon the interventions we have around in favor of like a solely punitive approach, especially when one of the glaring reasons I lifted up is students missing school is public safety in themselves. So I want to separate out that there are students who are not troublemakers, and they're just like us. Like they get on the metro, they might not feel the safest when certain situations are going on, or like we hear about, you know, young people's coats being stolen or shoes being stolen. That's not the same. In many cases, they also might be victims. Not every young person who isn't showing up for class is a kiddie criminal, right? And we also know that if students are in class, they're learning. They're not getting into trouble, and they're not doing the things we don't want them to do. They're on a different pathway for life. And so it is of the utmost importance that we get them to and through school, not just because we think they're going to cause us trouble, but because that's the path they're supposed to be on. Like, that's their job as kids, is to prepare for their future. And so we have to do our job to alleviate any barriers that challenge that.
Speaking of doing your job, you mentioned interventions. What is the plan to try to address these really difficult numbers and get students back in the school? I'm sure there isn't a one-size-fits-all situation.
It's definitely not a one-size-fits-all situation, but we've had some bright spots. I would say at the State Board of Education, we look for solutions. We actually have a monthly public meeting. Our next meeting is this coming Wednesday at 5:30 p.m. That'll be January 17th at the Old Council Chambers, where we're actually going to have a panel about the bright spots and hopefully lift up some solutions. Organizations like Communities and Schools is doing really good work around wraparound services and being able to actually tackle just different challenges and meet students where they are. We also have like some high schools, like Maya Angelou in Ward 7, which has amazing numbers. And so we're trying to figure out what is it that you're doing that other schools should be doing. If we learned anything during the pandemic, it's that schools really are the place where families get connected to services. And any plan that works is going to be one where we're making sure those services and supports are in schools. And we're looking for not just the places where we're like, oh, this is going wrong, but lifting up where things are going right. And that's really the work we're trying to do at the State Board, is lift up solutions to make sure that as we plan across the city, good things are happening for our kids.
Mm-hmm. Has there been any discussion about at least some initial steps to kind of correct this problem?
So the council has had two hearings about this. Mm-hmm. OSSE, which is also State Superintendent for Education, they're the ones that released the numbers. And then, of course, like we have DCPS and we have the individual charters, which are trying to kind of like put together solutions for their individual populations. What we really need, though, is a citywide plan that works across agencies, that incorporates all of our schools, and that really does touch all of our neighborhoods. That's not what we have yet. And when we look at D.C. compared to our neighboring jurisdictions, we're not doing as great as PG County or Montgomery County or Fairfax County, despite this being a national trend around truancy coming out of the pandemic. Yeah. That's not an excuse for us to be a national leader. And so the work I see us needing to do as a city is really taking a step back, taking a comprehensive approach, looking at the places where it's working, and putting more solutions and supports in place.
Before I let you go, can you share with us the information about that meeting, that monthly meeting, the next one? Because I think it's really important for those who are concerned about this, whether you have children or not in the District of Columbia, that they at least have an opportunity to provide some input. So when is it and where is it, please?
Yeah, so our next monthly meeting of the D.C. State Board of Education will be this January 17th, that's a Wednesday, mm-hmm. At 5:30 p.m. The address is 441 4th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. It is the Old Council Chambers or the Marion S. Berry Building. We're right above the Judiciary Square Metro stop. And if you are a very busy person who can't make it downtown to be with us, our meetings are also posted on our State Board website. So you can also see that information streamed at www.sboe.dc.gov.
Ebony Rose Thompson, President of the D.C. State Board of Education, thank you so much for talking to us. Good luck. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Sure thing. Well, we do have quite a bit to talk about tonight. Virginia's legislative session opens an historic first. Maryland also opening its General Assembly today. D.C. government telework policy says come back to work. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin's lack of transparency about his health. And, of course, the controversy surrounding comedian Cat Williams. We're going to talk about all of that. But first, joining us now for the Reporters Roundtable, Deborah Bailey, contributing editor with The Afro, and Darren Snyder, columnist with TheGrio.com. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can X me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Darren, good to see you again.
You too, my brother.
All right. And Deborah, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here.
So, ladies first, let me start with you. Let's talk about this issue of truancy, absenteeism in the District of Columbia. What did you hear from Ebony Rose Thompson? What struck you?
What struck me immediately was her emphasis on a comprehensive approach, an approach that has to do with both transportation, out-of-school factors, and increasing the viability of the in-school experience, both in the classroom and for young children and teenagers. You got to have something to do after school that is connected with school.
Interesting. Because I think one of the things that I found really fascinating and also unfortunate, and we've talked about this on this program for quite some time, is that the problem may not be in school. The problem is getting to school. Because if you are walking and you don't feel safe, you may feel a greater sense of security by staying home. And, you know, Darren, we have organizations in the city that have done their best to walk children to school to make sure that they have, you know, those safe passage programs. But apparently, according to, Ms. Rose Thompson, that's a much more serious issue than I think a lot of people think.
Yeah. So my wife is an assistant principal at a DCPS high school.
Okay.
And first, let me say God bless all the educators, everyone working in that space, because that's one of the most challenging and important areas that we have. And it's funny, when she said a comprehensive citywide plan, I kind of agree and don't agree, because each school is kind of different.
Every ward is different.
So I think that just collect all the best practices. She said, like, Maya Angelou is doing well, other schools that are doing well. Collect all the best practices, and then schools can see and pick and choose what works well for them. Because some of these neighborhoods, some of these schools, the kids are bringing beef from the neighborhood into the school. So they don't want to come to school where they're going to be in close proximity to the people that they're beefing with in the neighborhood. They're scared of violence. Some of the schools, the classes aren't engaging them, so they're not feeling like they're engaged. It has to be a holistic approach. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. But I don't know if it's a one-size-fits-all
thing. I agree. I hope she meant by comprehensive. She did not mean we all do the same thing, but we just got to make sure. I think that she is saying we need to make sure we are including our most underserved neighborhoods.
Absolutely, because a lot of the issues don't even have anything to do with school, but, you know, all the whole socioeconomic conditions around mm-hmm. the school. So I really like the thing they have in Harlem with the Enterprise Zone, where you got the school, you got the businesses, you have rec centers, you have government agencies, everyone working together mm-hmm. to kind of help shelter these young people to adulthood.
But you know, I like the thing that she said about the students who may not be in school, where she said not all of these absentee students are kiddie criminals.
Oh, no.
And I think that is such an important point, because you know, we've been hearing in this city for years and years and years that you have a few bad apples who are spoiling the whole bunch. When you're talking about juvenile crime in the city, the police talk about arresting the same juveniles over and over and over again. And I suspect that those who are not the kiddie criminals, but who are not in school, no, they're not going to be arrested. Why? Because they were afraid to walk to school. They may be afraid to get on the subway. They may be afraid to get on the bus, and instead would rather stay home to be safe, but are missing out on education.
And if you can get more kids to go to school, then the school becomes a cool place to go. So taking the violence part away, part of it has to do with like how attractive is it to go to school? Mm-hmm. You know, what's there for them? Like, we as adults, we know, like, this is where you need to be to learn and grow and develop your mind.
Yeah, but I didn't like it. I don't think that has ever changed.
Right. There has to be something. Yeah. There has to be something, because when more of them are there, like right now, it's easy to not go to school because you're like, oh, no one's going, right?
And so, nobody's going to care if I'm not there.
Yeah.
that seems to be an unfortunate truism.
And if your teachers are overwhelmed, which many of them are, and they're like, and now you're not only teaching the subject, you are engaging that entire child. So like you said, the everyone has to be part of the schools, your businesses, your community organizations, a whole lot of people got to come to school during the day. The teacher can't do it by himself or herself or themselves.
Yeah, we are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. We've got a lot to talk to. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's talk to Kareem, calling from Baltimore. Kareem, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, peace. How are you? I think that if we can collectively... And we could talk in terms of just walking children to school. Mm-hmm. Let's say, for instance, the high schoolers in that nearby community can facilitate trying to at a central place, and then it makes it one generation or one league of children responsible for another league. So it makes a community then be able to be formed, and you are correct. There has to be businesses that are in that community actively engaging, because in order for a community to be functioning, it has to be a collective of all people. But I think that it has to start with, in order to work, it has to include the children as well.
Yeah,
so I think that includes them.
Kareem, thank you so much I for your phone call. I would say it's kind of like when you were growing up, my mother said, look out for your sister. That is certainly aspirational. I would love to see if we had, you know, older students looking after, you know, some of the, you know, the younger students if they were on the way. That would make the world a better place again. Is that possible?
Logistically, that would be a problem.
Difficult,
because
yeah.
They go to schools. They have different times for their school days. So yeah. I like the idea if it's possible, but a lot of times the timing doesn't work.
We've got a lot to talk about tonight, and we invite you to give us a call if you want to talk about any of the things that we're talking about, even something that perhaps we mentioned before. Let me take one more phone call, though. Morale, also calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling, Morale. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to call just to make a comment on the truancy issue.
Sure.
I'm also a former. I heard one of the guys say their wife was a assistant principal. I'm a former assistant principal at a D.C. public school, high school, actually. And I just wanted to note that, you know, we've talked about a lot of things, and I heard the board president talk. But one thing we haven't raised is the parents' responsibility in this sense of truancy and really putting some onus on the parent. We don't put all of it on the parent, but there is a lot of onus on the parent. I heard, Harold, you say, hey, yeah, you know, we ought to make school fun, but, you know, none of us really liked school.
Mm-mm.
When we were younger, but we went because our parents held us accountable more so than anything else. So just wanted to raise that. And second of all, to that point, is that, you know, we have to also modernize our K-12 educational system. It's one of the systems that has been lagging when it comes to modernization, and it really needs to be modernized so that students can see the benefit from it, because currently, you know, most students don't see the benefit of going to high school just to go to college, just to be in debt when they graduate without a job. So really just looking at those two factors, I think, really have to be addressed when it comes to parent accountability and just providing a new modernized program for students nowadays that don't always match up with what's currently the new career that these students will be getting.
Morrell, thank you so much. You make some great points. I really appreciate your phone call. Before we go to the break, Virginia makes history today with the swearing in of the very first Black Speaker of the House of Delegates.
And every time I look around this room, I do see this. I see the ghost of those people who worked here, those Black folks who were enslaved here, whose dignity and humanity was discounted right here in this room. I see those people. And I know we, not just I, we carry their hopes and dreams and their posterity.
When we come back, we are going to be talking about the new Speaker of the House of Delegates in Virginia, Don Scott. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141 and WHUT-TV. I'm Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm is next. That's coming up on WHUR. We'll be back in just a bit with more of the Reporters Roundtable.